Welcome in, everybody. It is Inside the Gamecocks, the show. We are live from the mountains to the sea in the great state of South Carolina, coast to coast, nationwide and worldwide via the internet. And of course, we are broadcasting live, built by the Barn Dough Co. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, cutting through the orange fog of the upstate of South Carolina here. Of course, is JC Sherbert, my co-host from Points Unknown, and it is Friday. So, Fantastic Friday always brings us Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock himself. And of course, since we had an abbreviated episode yesterday, we've deferred our smorgasbord. Hope everybody's hungry. Alex Jones will join here in a little bit for the Gamecock smorgasbord. And we're off, gentlemen.
Say that five times without holding breath, without taking a breath.
Dude, it's a long...
I started it, and then I'm like, you're going way too fast, dude. Just slow down a little bit. And then I started slowing down a little bit, and then I'm like, now you're overthinking it. And I got all caught up in my head and got everything I wanted to say all screwed around and just flopping around in there like a fish out of water. And next thing you know, somebody texted me, and I should have had my phone turned around like I normally do, but I had turned it around now to do something else. And I'm okay, never mind. So
that's amazing.
That's all the behind the scenes of how a rocky start to a Friday episode begins, everybody.
Phil, have you ever seen Inside Out, the Disney movie?
Yes. Oh, please.
That was what's going on in your head right there.
And when they went with the second Inside Out, I was like, no, I got even more of those little guys up there than that.
Unbelievable. Well,
great franchise though from Pixar though. I like the Inside Outs.
Yeah, they're good.
All right, so sorry I had to bug out yesterday. Sorry there was no coffee this morning. There's some stuff, you know, some stuff going on I could not miss. But I am back and we're ready to talk Gamecocks here for the next hour and a half. Alex Jones is joining us at the top. We do have something to stump him on today, although it's not a VHS date, or not stump him, but expose him to, because Alex is a young pup and he did not get to grow up in the 80s and 90s and wasn't as privileged as we were. And so we want to expose him to as much as we possibly can and have him evaluated. It's like a college course in Gen X culture for Mr. Jones. So we'll have him in there and all that good stuff. Wanted to start off first by saying thanks to the softball players that joined JB and to John Strickland. That was a heck of a show. And you'll forgive me if I'm battling a cold a little bit today for some reason. And we'll get in the ITG chat box. I want to start off by saying thanks to them for having such a good show. Four Quarter Friday, the podcast or version is up on those channels. So please go to Apple or Spotify and subscribe to them. They had a wonderful show as well. So guys, I kind of, it's funny that y'all mentioned SEC Mike Bratton. Bratton's not going to come on our show anymore probably now. Because, you know, I kind of had some things to say and then we put it on about his guest and then we put it on the ITG Twitter account as well, or the X account. And it was kind of like, I don't know, man. I mean, it was just facts. And I think SEC Mike thought we were talking about him and he was like, no, I like the Kendall Briles hire. It was his guest, but we didn't point that out on the tweet. So I feel bad about that. Obviously he's not a fan of Clayton White's defense and 11th is certainly very interesting as far as the rankings go. But yeah, we went through that and, it's funny because, like, and I want to throw this out to y'all into the chat box. So, a Gamecock fan on X, you know, clearly a Gamecock fan, as not one in disguise, mentioned Briles was not sought after. He's like, I think he meant to say, I'm not going to hold my breath, but he said, I'll hold my breath. And I kind of laughed because I was like, what's, you know, what does this really mean? And you know, so I read it, but my question is, you know, I've always thought Carolina should hire Kendall Briles. We don't know with assistant coaches what opportunities he may have turned down. But my question is this: to make a good coaching hire, because I see this a lot when people talk about hiring Beamer or a hire they don't like. Nobody else wanted him. Well, nobody else offered Steve Spurrier a job before South Carolina did when they hired him either out of retirement. I mean, that's that. I don't know that that means as much as it does, but does that mean anything to you guys, Matt? That you know, there wasn't some public recruiting battle like there was for Lane Kiffin for an offensive coordinator.
It doesn't really bother me. I think that, in all honesty, guys, there are probably 50 to 60 really good offensive-minded coaches, whether they're coordinators or sitting head coaches at lower levels. I think it's really about finding the guy that meshes with your system, because we've seen this time and time again all across college football. I mean, go look no further than Auburn. You can get the splashiest name at offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator, and at the end of the day, it doesn't work out for this reason or that. And it's because you got the name and you didn't get what fit your system at the time. And especially now, college football is such in a win now mentality with NIL and the transfer portal that you got to find the guy that can bend their system to what you have or what you're going to be bringing in and roll with it. And it has to be a year over year thing. It can't just be flash in the pan. You had a really good first year, and well, the entire group of players on offense changes or on defense changes, and now you can't figure it out. I think it's just better to get a smart guy, an offensive coordinator that knows how to move and mix players around. So no, I don't care if it's a bidding war. And honestly, the only thing a bidding war does is helps the agent and helps the coach. I don't think that you should be in the market of a bidding war if you can avoid it.
Yeah, and I just don't know how standard it is, or that we even know. I mean, you know, because if it's and I think it's kind of a recruiting mindset and something, because people follow recruiting, and you know, it does matter who you beat in recruiting or who else really wanted it. Well, this team and this team came hard and came hard after them, and it's you can kind of measure it that way. I don't think coaching hires are like that. I think for every situation like Lane Kiffin, there's 17 of them that happen where, you know, there's not offers being made necessarily. I think with assistants, I mean, you just don't know. I mean, like Beamer said last year, after Clayton White got an extension and a raise, or somebody, he mentioned that somebody got a head coaching job offer off of his staff and turned it down. Somebody got Power Five coordinator. He mentions that. We don't ever hear about it with assistants. So I don't think Kendall Browse and that hire unquestionable? Like, can you not, are there going to be people that could make an argument that it's not a good hire? Yes. As long as you use facts, unlike that guy on that SEC podcast yesterday that just seemed to make things up or mentioned social media rumors as evidence for something. You know, you got to be correct about it, but it's not, I don't necessarily think that Kendall Browse is like a guy that, you know, oh God, it's definitely going to happen. I mean, we've learned that lesson around here, right? With coordinators. There's been coordinator hires people have questioned that have been bad. There's been coordinator hires that people have not questioned that have been bad. There's been coordinator hires that people have questioned that have been better than we thought, you know? And so, I don't know that you could tell anything. I was just wondering specifically if that matters. You know, what other opportunities publicly do we know that we know, do we need as people that talk about this and the fans out there, do they need verifiable other options to feel comfortable about a coaching hire? I just don't know that that matters.
Well, I mean, because you can only offer the job to one person at a time, right? It's not like you offer the job to five people and say, all right, who wants it the most? You know, take less money. Yeah. I mean, that's on pre-negotiation stuff. But I mean, even go up to the Upstate and their hire of Chad Morris being rehired as the offensive coordinator. Where was the demand for Chad Morris? And if you talk to Clemson fans, they are lukewarm at best, even though he produced some of their best offensive seasons in school history. So, I mean, you look at it from the grand scheme of things, and you're never going to know about an offensive coordinator hire until a year, 2 years later. You got to get a couple of seasons under their belt before you can really determine anything. But I'm just saying, I mean, I don't think the coaches really want to be a part of a bidding war either that's public, because that just, that ups the pressure on producing immediately as well.
Unless you're Lane Kiffin.
I think Lane Kiffin, he relishes. Off it, man.
I think he definitely relishes that. So in the ITG chat box, so Ben has some hockey. He says, USC hockey is taking gold this year, too. Get your bets down now. I admire your patriotism, Ben. I'll be pulling for them as well. Blake comes in by Coyotes. In South Carolina, they tag the Coyotes. If you kill a tagged one, you can get a $1,000 fine. Okay. Bruin says they're free game here with hogs. Now, I've read about the feral hog epidemic.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the Murdaugh thing on Hulu. They're hunting hogs out there. And I've heard that there's nuisances. But I've heard that thing about that.
Yeah, it's wild how incredibly destructive they are. It's weird.
Yes. Oink, oink. You know. Krager said he's off today. Air frying Wagyu burgers. And coming up and day drinking. That's awesome.
All right.
It's day drinking. I guess I'm just getting old, dude. I like to day drink better. Like the wife will be like, you know, you want to go grab a drink or something when I get off? Now you get off too late. The sun's down. I don't like to drink after the sun's going down.
Nah, I'm good.
It's like I Am Legend. You know, the sun starts going down. You look at the sunset. Yeah. You get anxiety. You're like, I got to go home. That's kind of crazy. Ben's jealous. Matt, are you a date? You like to day drink when you drink? You don't have time to have beers anymore now, man, with the kid.
it's honestly just not worth it at any point, whether it's daytime, nighttime. My brother and I did get after it. We saw each other a couple weekends ago, and I paid for it that Saturday terribly, and I think I've just sworn it off in general going forward. It's just
That's the thing, dude. It's like it's not so much the act of doing it, it's the next following days. And I use that plural because sometimes, man, like New Year's, I wasn't 100% for a couple of days. Let's just put it that way.
I think something happened for me. Like when I hit my 30s, I don't know what it was. Like it just stunk. And then when you got a kid in the mix too, it's just right.
Man,
you can deal with the wife hanger with you, but you got to be there for your kid.
I hardly drank at all in my 30s. I was a workaholic. I worked all the time, traveled all over the place, and it just wasn't with being on a plane and running a site, building companies and stuff. I just couldn't do it because I couldn't, you know, when I wanted to relax or take a day off, I just wanted to kind of nap and watch a movie or something. But in my mid 30s, after I got divorced the first time, I jumped back in with both feet.
Nothing wrong with it.
And then as my 40s have gone along, slowed down significantly. So I totally get it. But Craig, we're all jealous of the day drinking. It's if I feel like doing it, that's when I want to do it. And then I'm usually in the bed by 7. So I get nice.
So that's the thing that gets me with the day drinking is like, it's all fine, well and good. And I like it, but then it's time for bed and I lose the entire night.
Yes. Oh, Blake.
A giant Dos Equis in a Mexican restaurant. Sign me up. That's fine. That's good.
Oh, that's good.
That beer tastes day good. Drinking when you only have one.
No, I don't. I'll have tea if I only have one. Okay. Blake said it's a reward, not a fine. Of $1,000. So if you kill a tagged coyote, $1,000 reward. All right, that's good. In South Carolina, Krager wanted Kendall Bryce 3 years ago, just didn't think they could get him. They could have gotten him 3 years ago before he went to TCU, is my understanding, or at least he was interested. But
I think he's a better offensive coordinator now than he was 3 years ago, too. And I think that South Carolina's getting a better end of that deal.
It's good to kind of, I think, for coaches to kind of go different places under different head coaches and do different things. I think that's always helps, especially on offense, because you're always adding and taking things away. And you mentioned, Matt, like the flexibility. That's been Beamer's vision for the offense for a while. People are like, they disagree because they're like, well, but I mean, and you can accomplish having a flexible system that fits any style quarterback and all that, with a quote unquote pro style offense, because pro playbooks are big and they do a lot of things. And, you know, I get that part of it, but Kendall Briles is also, it's also applicable, because he adjusts to his personnel and, they just do it a little different. They do it really fast and it's more simple to learn and all that. All right, Phil, let's get a break in.
Yeah.
Since we were late getting started, get a break here, and then we'll break again for Alex. When we get back, we'll talk a little about college, get back in the chat box a little bit, talk a little about something that I think Stuart Mandel wrote in his mailbag yesterday, which was a quote about where we're at in this crazy college football world, and about accountability and school level accountability. You know, want to see what you guys think about that on the show after this. We'll be back.
New year, right? Let the procrastination begin. You've done it before. Join the gym. Go for a couple of weeks and then it's over. So here's our solution. Bring the gym to you. Do it your way, on your time, in your home. Visit Charleston Fitness Equipment and start where you want to start. CharlestonFitnessEquipment.com. Have a healthy new year. Palm Casual Patio Furniture are proud supporters of our Gamecocks. We have been making and supplying the highest quality outdoor furniture you can find for almost 5 decades. If you use your outdoor space to watch the Gamecocks, make it the best it can be. Visit palmcasual.com or visit one of our 4 locations in South Carolina. Go Gamecocks!
Looking for a new car? You need to think about a Kia. If you're in the market for an SUV, consider the new Kia Telluride or the new Kia Sorento. They're big, they're strong, and loaded with tech for thousands less than Honda or Toyota. You'll see the difference right away, and you get double the warranty. Plus, you get the JT's Advantage million-mile warranty and about 1,000 other things you have to see to believe.
If you want the biggest bang for your buck, it's time to think about a new JT's Kia.
We're serious about saving you money.
Today and every day, we celebrate our great state of South Carolina. This week, our hometown highlight takes us to the banks of Winya Bay, to beautiful Georgetown. Visit the Rice Museum the next time you stroll Front Street. We love you, Georgetown.
Hey, Georgetown, this is your Lowcountry lawyer and friend, Mason West at the West Law Firm. We love our folks in Georgetown, just like we do all across the state of South Carolina. And if you've been injured in a car wreck or hurt on the job, we're here to help. Call us at West Law Firm, 843-897-7525.
Sure look good. But you know it.
And now back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show, rolling on here on a fantastic Friday. We're live. Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, JC Sherbert, and Matt Anderson in here. Alex Jones joins at the top of the hour for our weekly Gamecocks smorgasbord. Had to delay it again. But, you know, I like our little hometown spotlight thing that we're putting together with West Law Firm and Georgetown. Yeah. One thing I like about Georgetown is that And my favorite thing about Georgetown is Front Street, which is mentioned in there because I love to put people on Front Street.
Dude,
it's so good.
You paused there and said my favorite thing about Georgetown is, and then I was like, surely he's just not gonna like be silent because Bill doesn't like Georgetown for some reason. I went to Georgetown a couple of years ago for a Carolina Rise event, met a lot of good people, hung out right there on the water. It's up and coming. Georgetown County's up and coming. There's a lot of people there. So, yeah. So Mandel yesterday in his mailbag, and a lot of the stuff that they have on The Athletic, I'm not in total agreement with, but it's one of those things that's it was interesting, and he said something to the effect of, because I had the direct quote ready to go yesterday and I deleted it out of my email. No, never mind. Here it is. He said, if schools truly want guardrails, they have to start applying those guardrails to themselves. And his point was that there are a certain amount of schools out there that are fine with not having any rules concerning NIL, tampering, whatever. It was based on the tampering fiasco. He also mentioned tampering is a level 2 violation, and you don't really get in much trouble if you get popped for it. How about that?
Yeah,
I mean, coaches will probably tell you it's one of the biggest problems they have, but it's a level 2 violation. And my guess is it's not as they put that rule in a long time ago, you can always make a mistake. You know, oh, this kid's not technically, he's not in the portal yet. If a coach maybe sees a report, he's getting into the portal, but he's not in there yet and calls him by mistake. I mean, sometimes lesser penalties for common mistakes, but man, this is pretty egregious. So I don't what Dabo was talking about. So I don't know, but I think that's right. And I think, you know, there's no centralized leadership. It's everybody for himself. You know, we talk about the high dollar NIL deals getting out of control. We talk about coaches' salaries getting out of control. And the reason that's like it is, it's market economics, is that there's always a school that will do it. You know, there's always a either a desperate place or a whatever that will pay that much money, you know? And so it trickles out throughout the sport. You can never get everybody agreeing. And there's a lot of schools with different cultures, different leaders, different philosophies. So it's hard to do. You can never get everybody on the same page. What do you think, Matt?
Honestly, I don't think there's been rules for a long time. And the fact that we have coaches that are calling the NCAA into question, the NCAA hasn't been a functioning body for college athletics with teeth in a very, very long time. You know, I put on the big spur after all this stuff kind of broke. It seemed like, you know, Dabo wasn't complaining about tampering 101 or tampering 201. It was tampering 301. And I mean, if I'm Dabo, I'm not saying that publicly because it's just saying what level of tampering is allowed and then becomes a slippery slope. Now, I think that a lot of this happens more than we know across the country. And I do think that if you start enforcing the rules, which look, I'm a big rule follower. You know, when the light turns yellow, I start slowing down. I'm not one of the people that speed through it. I don't run red lights. I don't run stop signs. Like, I feel like you have to have rules and you have to follow them. But there's a lot of people out there that run every yellow light, run red lights, don't stop at stop signs. And the cops can't get all of them, right? So it just becomes, you know, you can try and make an example out of somebody and I'm all for it. Look, I mean, if Ole Miss gets made an example of, I wish they were on South Carolina's schedule for the next coming years. But at the end of the day, I don't think that anything is going to happen with this. I think the longer that it goes, I think there's a lot of people that want to cry about it. And I'm talking about national media because it's a talking piece. They get clicks. They get a lot of people paying attention. This can run for all offseason for Stuart Mandel if he wants to. And he might just do it. We've seen a lot of national writers do that. But at the end of the day, the NCAA knows their place, and their place is whatever the Big Ten and the SEC and Notre Dame tell them to do. And it's going to be interesting to follow. I just,
I think it's a lot of hoopla about nothing, quite frankly. Nothing is going to change.
Yeah, I disagree with the couple of things. I nobody's going to impose guardrails on themselves without having some sort of consensus that it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, what we do have in college football is conferences. So the conferences themselves could do that, but they're again in their best interest. It's not in their best interest to do it if the others aren't going to do it. Now, what you can regulate, and I think that the SEC needs to kind of get in front of at this point, is intra-conference transfers and tampering. You can impose, you know, real teeth intra-conference. You can't, you know, do anything you want to with other conferences, but within your membership, you can have penalties and things of that nature. The other thing I don't agree with when it comes to specifically the NCAA is the whole traffic moving violations analogy. Yeah, you can't catch them all if you're one cop, but there's not just one cop. The NCAA is a large bureaucracy with offices full of pencil pushers who have the ability to do more than one school at a time when these accusations come in. And what have they done up to this point? Because I'm sure some pretty concrete evidence has been presented to the NCAA in this small time that we have of player tampering. And in true Indianapolis fashion, nothing has happened.
Nothing.
Well, on the flip side of that, Phil, if you think about it, like, if I'm the NCAA, they're not trying to create more work for themselves. They've never been about that life. They don't want 28 lawsuits coming in on the same day. Because what I would do is, if I'm the NCAA, I'm going to collect all the evidence and in my time frame say, well, here's 28 schools that all have the same penalty. Here's 37 schools that have penalty two. Here's 42 that have penalty three. They all get levied on the same day. And then after that, you're not eligible for our conference. You're not eligible for a national title. And we'll put this in legal proceedings for years and years and years. But you can't just make an example out of one program. Like, you can't, because it's happening all over the place. You have to just say, here's all our evidence. And once a year, here's our rulings. I don't know the right answer. That's something you could do.
I don't know. But that's that was one point I brought up on the morning show, Matt, was what I'm worried about is Ole Miss is going to get some sort of, you know, bigger hammer than ever dropped on them by, you know, our august overseers at the NCAA to make an example out of them, while that would be completely unfair, truly, to any of the other schools. Because we know, I mean, all you have to do is, you know, not even read between the lines, because Beamer has said there is tampering going on, right? He didn't throw anybody under the bus specifically like Dabo did. He wasn't calling out specific schools, but to say that there is no tampering going on is completely untrue. And it would be, again, and then the cynic in me is like, but Ole Miss is the perfect school to do this to, because it attacks the one thing they can't stand the most, which is the SEC.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And Ole Miss, see, the thing is, though, they're going to go back and say, well, what about all the players from Ole Miss that went to LSU? And Kiffin,
right.
Exactly. And that to me is probably why Ole Miss was rather aggressive with some things. They were upset about that. Or maybe that's just the new Ole Miss under Pete Golding. Maybe we're not going to be surprised when we hear more stories like that moving forward. Okay, so Matt, you're a Florence guy and South Florence High School graduate, I'm assuming. Bruin, who's the biggest South Florence, he's the king of the South Florence fans, said, any insight on who the next head coach will be when Drew Marlowe takes the Sumter job? I guess is what he's speculating there.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't. I saw that, and I shot some texts out. I haven't got anything back yet.
It's tough. I thought it was going to be really hard to keep Drew Mon. Carlo for a very long time. I didn't think he was ever going to be a 29 at South Lawrence. Phenomenal, phenomenal coach. I think he could be a college coach, honestly, the way he runs that South Lawrence program. But we got to understand, Sumter's home for him. It's where he played high school, where his family's from. They really don't have a ton of family in Florence. So I understand the move. And Sumter's a really good football school, too. But I have no idea. I mean, I think it's almost a Nick Saban-esque job to follow at this point. Like, you, to be the guy that replaces Drew Marlowe, I wouldn't wish that on anybody. But, no. You know, maybe there's an internal guy there. Maybe there's somebody who can – who's seen what's worked. But, you know, you never want to follow the guy. So maybe South Lawrence is going to go back to where it's always been brewing. I hate that, but we'll see.
There was a time when I was growing up, the 5A was basically called the Big 16, and my dad always said, son, the four best high school programs in South Carolina would start with an S. They all start with S. And he said, Sumter, Spartanburg, Somerville, believe it or not, Spring Valley was a powerhouse at one point. That's before I even think it was a Dutch Fork High School. It was back in the 80s, but maybe it just come online. But Sumter's always been a really good job. I understand if you're from there, so that's good. It's good to talk that. Four Quarter Friday guys are going to talk that to death as well, Bruin. We appreciate the question. All right, so we got four. Let's hit a break. Get Alex on in, Phil.
Yeah, I got a double one up anyway. So
yeah, I got to double it up. The double mint break. We'll get back on the other side. Gonna ask Alex a bunch of questions and let he and Matt talk. Tired, it's Friday.
Right, we'll preview the
late
night
game. Late night Gamecock show. Don't forget about Gamecock Traditions, GamecockTraditions.com, all over the worldwide web. All over the world, they can ship you Gamecock gear. Home of the original beat stickers, which I used to not like because I was superstitious. Not superstitious anymore, so I love them. GamecockTraditions.com, proud sponsor of the show. We'll be back. Smorgasbord time with Alex Jones. Reminisce about Quincy's and Ryan's. I saw in the chat box somebody said Quincy's or Ryan's. Which one do you like best? I'll have to think about that.
I don't know. Ooh, Ryan's.
I'd have to think about that for a little bit. You say Ryan's, man? So.
Yeah.
Alex is probably too young to remember Quincy's and Ryan's, but we'll throw that at him as well as we continue his Gen X education. Smorgasbord on the other side as the show rolls on a Friday.
The story of Game Day Nuts is a simple one, really. One summer day on the coast of North Carolina, Tommy and Russ were on the beach enjoying the warm ocean breeze, talking about the upcoming college football season, and eating that quintessential Southern treat, fresh boiled peanuts. But time and time again, as they cracked open the boiled peanuts, either the shells they were opening were empty, or the peanuts inside the shells were getting stuck. They thought to themselves, there has to be a better way to enjoy this Southern treat. And with that, they set out to solve the problem, and Game Day Nuts was born.
Get the shell out of here. Visit GameDayNuts.net and change your boiled peanut experience forever.
New year, better floors. Now is the time. Refinish your hardwood floors with Recoat Revolution. Beautiful like new floors in just one day. No dust, affordable, and 5 stars. Give us a call in South Carolina, 803-397-1365. Or visit us at RecoatRevolution.com. Go Gamecocks!
Gamecock Traditions is your one-stop shop for all things South Carolina. From apparel to tailgating, children's clothing to kitchenware, jewelry, or even gift cards. If it exists, it exists at Gamecock Traditions. Ship it to your home via GamecockTraditions.com or go see our friends in Lexington. Gamecock Traditions, a family tradition. Go Gamecocks.
Sell your quality sports and fitness equipment to Play It Again Sports and get paid. recycling your in-demand sports gear keeps it available in your community. Sell, buy, trade, and win with Play It Again Sports!
Jeffrey's got space and a touchdown!
If your golf game needs a little help, McKellar Enterprises is one click away. Meredith Taylor, a former Gamecock golfer, fields clients from all across the country. Golfers of every level are enrolling in her well-rounded golf camps. They're improving their game through virtual and on-course lessons. And now, many are a part of the membership program that gives you multiple monthly coaching options to get better. Are you improving for fun? Don't want to hold the group back any longer? Visit McKellarEnterprises.org today and go Gamecocks.
Test ride at Electric Bikes of Charleston today. Road trip ready. Ride comfortably. Forget road fatigue. The Velotric Fold 1 Plus features our exclusive Comfort Max frame design for an effortless, upright riding posture and a low step through. With an adjustable seat and stem, you'll be feeling great and ready for the next campsite adventure. Your back will thank you. Visit Electric Bikes of Charleston. Electric Bikes, Charleston.com.
New year, better floors, now is the time. Refinish your hardwood floors with Recoat Revolution. Beautiful like new floors in just one day. No dust, affordable, and five stars. Give us a call in South Carolina, 803-397-1365. Or visit us at RecoatRevolution.com. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome to Dry Space Crawl Space Solutions. Basement crawl space encapsulation designed for your specific needs. Your crawl space can be susceptible to all sorts of issues, including moisture buildup, mold growth, and structural damage if not cared for properly. Let our trained experts provide basement crawl space encapsulation solutions to protect your home, improve air quality, and enhance energy efficiency. Schedule your consultation today for a safer, healthier space at dryspacecs.com. Dry Space Crawl Space Solutions, proud supporters of your South Carolina Gamecocks.
Do you like hot fudge sundaes? All right.
It's the Gamecock Smorgasbord with Alex Jones.
Welcome back, everybody. Inside the Gamecocks rolls on here. Final hour of the show for a Friday. Fantastic Friday. Alex Jones is in for the Gamecocks Smorgasbord. But Alex, we found something that may hit a little closer to home than it, you know, than you might feel comfortable talking about. But there's a woman apparently in Brazil who married a ragdoll, welcomes her fourth child. And we couldn't help to think that since you were the pride of Hampton County, that perhaps you might have run into something down there in your neck of the woods very similar to this. Is this something that is prevalent down there in Hampton County that we just don't know
about? Not that I know of.
You don't think there's are ragdoll marriages against the county ordinances down there? Right.
Is there anything saying you can't marry a ragdoll? And have their children.
Dude, all right, so there was no VHS dates, but this lady's definitely a candidate.
So here, let's read the thing.
Go into that a little bit.
Brazilian woman Marivone Roca Moraes says she is now expecting a baby with her ragdoll husband, Marcello, claiming the pregnancy is part of their ongoing, air quotes, marriage. She previously went viral for holding a wedding ceremony with the handmade doll and treating the relationship as real, including sharing family updates online. She says the baby news has brought renewed attention to their unconventional relationship, which she continues to present publicly as normal family life. I think you missed an opportunity there too, Alex, to throw Colleton County under the bus.
Yeah.
I should have. Definitely sounds like that something that would happen in the swamps.
Right. I should have thought about that.
Matt, have you know anybody in Florence that may have married a rag doll?
I can imagine there's some with the blow up doll, but I've never seen a rag doll.
That's what I'm thinking. You know, what's obviously, so I'm looking at this lady with the microphone. She's a decent looking. She's not a troll.
No,
she's no. You know, she looked. I mean, and this rag doll. If you're not watching on video, you know, if you're on the podcast version or whatever, this rag doll is a hideous looking rag doll. Like, literally looks like a 7 year old just got magic markers and drew a mustache and a nose on it.
Yeah, it made me think it was a shotgun wedding because it looks like he was hastily thrown together.
He looks miserable already. In the wedding.
Well, he inherited three kids.
He got the picture with the three kids. The poor fellow looks like he's aged like 10 years and 3 years because they're little. They're all little, one after the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got some strong genetics. Those eyebrows. I mean, my goodness.
Those eyebrows came through big time, bigly.
Yeah, they did.
So I don't know. So we're not going to rank her star rating wise. We reserve that for our VHS dates, people.
Yeah.
But Alex, do you think... would you say this woman
at this wedding?
There are people that attended.
I know.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
It looks like her parents are back there. There's a child in there too. So Alex, do you think this woman is A, insane, B, attention seeking, or C, just emotionally done with the members of the opposite sex because of a past experience? Just people watch and diagnose her from here, Dr.
Can we go D, all the above?
All of the above, probably. It's a logical
she
story.
She checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
So I guess first question for you, Alex, and Matt, you chime in too on all this because we're having another late night Gamecock show, the show mashup on Friday.
Alex just follows me around now.
Yeah.
I know.
It's just crazy. But so what is the weather this weekend going to affect the junior? I don't want to say junior day, but the unofficial visits they have scheduled.
I haven't heard any changes lately, but snow will be a little bit easier to manage than the ice last weekend, I think, just from a travel perspective. But I haven't heard if it's going to be changed. I mean, obviously, they changed the basketball time up, so. And I think with last weekend being canceled, they're going to want to do everything they can to get a lot of these guys in this weekend to make the most of the opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you there because we go back into a quiet or dead period, right?
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah. Next month.
So tell us about some of the guys that are coming in.
Yeah, I mean, Trey Sagara is going to be one of the top names that's coming in. I mean, that's a guy that everybody knows about being an in-state running back guy. You know, 24/7 has him as a top five running back in the country. That's a guy that everybody's going to have their eyes on. It seems like that one could be a Tennessee-South Carolina type of battle there for him. KJ Green's another one. That's one of these high-profile guys that's coming in, a five-star edge from Stone Mountain, Georgia. And one that, you know, I think was going to be an interesting kind of watch in his recruitment because he and Sterling Lucas had built a really tight relationship early on in his recruitment. But I think Deion Barnes has really kind of picked it up right where they left off with him, which is a really good sign because he's, you know, the interest has remained there. And that's, you know, I think South Carolina's going to be in that one all the way to the end with an Alabama or a Texas A&M, some of those other schools that are really kind of fighting there. So that's kind of two of the biggest names. And, you know, we'll see kind of who else pops up on the radar. Like, you've seen – this coaching staff, they've been out on the road these past few weeks, going pretty much throughout the country to see some of their top prospects, be it in 27 classes or things like that. And then you're also seeing some 28 offers being thrown out. So, you know, we'll see who else maybe kind of pops up on the radar as a visit here this weekend.
Yeah. I like the group. They you know, I like all those names. KJ Green, especially. I mean, they've been on him for a while, but you're right. It was Sterling Lucas. And then the in-state guys, the Segura from Burn. I think Clemson's in the mix for him, too, with Tennessee. So, you know, there's that going on as well. Shane Beamer will meet with the media, by the way, on Monday to talk about the portal class. Jamie mentioned it on the morning show. So here's a question for both of you. It's about basketball. Matt drops his head. I want to read this first for Chaco. He says, about the ragdoll husband. He's like, this is hilarious.
This is great.
He's ready to leave because she called him a dummy. It's great, dude.
So good.
Bruin asked if he could claim the ragdoll children on taxes. If so, he's going to get 5 blow-up kids to claim. I'm not familiar with the tax laws in Brazil. They're a bit socialist, so I
want to know how the ragdoll said its vows. They have like a voice box in there that was pre-recorded.
Oh, now that would be great.
There's a lot of questions here.
Like, you got a guy sitting in the corner, like,
I do. It's insane. Absolutely insane. So we'll get the basketball in a second. Ben does say Trey Segura and Jaden Kelly Murray, who's now at Oceanside Collegiate. Yeah. He was at Somerville, are the two biggest wants in the class. He's seen them both play in person. They definitely stand out. Segura, to me, is a bigger back. And then I like Kelly Murray as well. What do you think about those two as players? And then we'll get to basketball.
Yeah, Segura has been, you know, the top back in the state for a little while now. But when you look at him play, he's just at that size. He's really a physical runner, but he's also explosive as all get out too. Like when you see him, he can run in between the tackles, but he can, you know, get those tough yards, get those 2 to 3 yards to get a first down type of thing, or he can, you know, explode and get one of those explosive runs for a touchdown. So, I mean, you can see why he's going to end up being one of the top running backs in the country for this 27 class. And then Kelly Murray's really intriguing too. I saw him play for Somerville in the state championship game. He had a really nice touchdown catch on that one. A guy that, you know, I think, you know, I've seen, you know, Florida is really in this one with him too. There's a few other schools, but, you know, South Carolina's in this one. But now I think he's going to end up – there's a few really good receivers in the state. Christian Jackson's another one over at Ridgeview that's got a South Carolina offer. But Kelly Murray, I think, is like a top-of-the-board type of guy recruit for them.
Yeah. All right, so one more because Chaco's got a great question. And I'll throw it to Matt first, and then Matt will throw it to Alex. And I'll give my answer here. Chaco says, within the state, which city or town is on the rise pertaining to talent in football or for recruiting? I mentioned how much I like the PD in Florence, but I'll say this. I think Greenville County, which historically it's a large county. They've made better investments. The difference between Greenville and Spartanburg from a high school sports standpoint is that Spartanburg has 7 separate school districts that have 9 high schools. There's only 2 districts that have 2 high schools in them. I believe District 2 has Chesney and Boiling Springs, and then I think District 1 has Chapman and Landrum. But everybody else has 1 high school. And so depending on your school district, you can pour money at Dorman, Spartanburg, Burns after BMW got there. You know, Woodruff's growing now. So it helps fund – everybody kind of funds themselves. Greenville County is 1 big school district. So – they kind of had to spread it out, and it takes a longer time to get things done on a county level with that many schools, that many kids. And so for years, it probably didn't have the best programs, but they're investing now. And I think as that region or that county goes from being a fast growing up and coming county to like a more of a metropolitan county, it feels like, I hope I'm not here when that happens. I hope I move someplace by then. You know, obviously more people, more resources, more kids, population, more football talent. So I would say Greenville County. And then second would be Ore, because it is growing as well. I realize there's a lot of people that have retired there, but you look at a school like Carolina Forest, that's huge now. And you look at the reclassification, but what say you, Matt, on talent, up and coming talent areas in the state of South Carolina?
I'd probably, I mean, I just know the PD. The PD always has players. West Florence is on the come up. South Florence on the come up. Wilson always has dudes. I mean, I say South Florence on the come up there. They're all the way at the top.
I knew you were going to say Florence.
Yeah, but I mean, the PD does have really, really good players. You can just look around and their record shows it. And, you know, when we go to 7-on-7s, I've always been impressed with how they stack up against other teams. And I do think that, especially South Florence, in the lines of scrimmage, I think there's some really good players there. There's a kid, I think he was a guard this year. He might be a tackle, but he was all region in tennis as well. All region in football and tennis. So I'd probably say the PD, but that's just because that's where I'm familiar with. You know, that's what I see when I go. I don't really open the newspaper, but when I go on the internet and I look at the news in my town, I see the box scores. I see everything. So, yeah. And hey, don't forget, you know, Lance out there in Jayville, they got some up and coming. They got athletes all over the PD.
I think that little corner of the state's good for talent, bro. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll say I agree with Matt, that area. I mean, heck, you could throw – I mean, Columbia area has always had some really good prospects come through. But, I mean, lately it's been loaded with Irmo and Dutch Fork area kids. I mean, Irmo's pumping out Division I top talent every year. Dutch Fork always is. Then you got guys at some of these other schools, like I mentioned, Christian Jackson at Ridgeview, who's going to be, you know, a top receiver in the country or a top receiver in the state. Like, it's – you know, the Columbia area, I think, has always kind of had some really good prospects, but it feels like that's continued to boost as well.
Yeah, that's Columbia school. You know, Irmo, Dutch Fork, Ridgeview are pretty consistent. You know, Blythewood hadn't had anybody in a while. Westwood had Cam Smith. At least nobody I'm thinking of. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see through the years, like White Knoll, how that – as that area grows.
Even the Skeezer schools here have had some guys. Mike Tyler at Hammond. You had the linebacker – I'm completely blanking on his name right now from Hammond. That's just got a South Carolina offer. That's in one of these future classes. Hammond, Heathwood, I mean, they've had some guys. They had Onus Conanberry, Banny, who was a cornerback who went to, I think it was either Florida or Tennessee. I'm blanking on that one too. But even, you know, the Skeezy schools here have pumped out some talent too.
Yeah. And Chaco asked about up and coming on the rise. Obviously, Rock Hill is always going to have that. Yeah. It's loaded all the time. And, but I do think Columbia didn't, you know, it's kind of been up and down through the years, like the rest of the state. And Columbia, really consistently, there's been a lot of talent around Columbia. And the Gamecocks have gotten most of those players, too. I think that's good. The Charleston area, like, and I know there's a kid from Somerville coming up, but from Charleston down to Hilton Head, Buford, there used to be guys at Buford just about every year. And there's been kind of a drought in that area, the Bluffton area and all that. And the Charleston area, too. You know, I went through the draft – the players from South Carolina that have been drafted that went to Carolina, the Gamecocks. And of the 13, like the other parts of the state, the PD, the Midlands, the upstate, kind of had more representation than the Charleston area. And that hasn't always been the case. So,
I also think, JC, it's a hard question to answer because I listened to Phil and JB and Preston talk about this other day. You know, what position is South Carolina known for? And y'all kind of went through all the position groups. I do think South Carolina has a quarterback problem. I see Bruin mentioned the Dylan kid in 2029. And there's just so many programs in South Carolina where you go and you look at athlete for athlete, they're pretty daggum good. And I compare them, you know, across the country. I think they do well, but it's the quarterback play that I think holds a lot of these kids back from being able to show what they can do. And it just becomes really projectable. So that's the biggest issue I see in South Carolina. We need a crop of quarterbacks. I don't know if we need a Perry to continue with that quarterback camp and get all these guys in there, but go find the best and start growing them because we need them in our state.
Yeah, it's not a state that produces a ton of quarterbacks, really. My whole career, who was the highest rated quarterback out of South Carolina? I could probably Willie Korn until,
you know, he was Yeah, especially his junior year.
Yeah, he was his junior tape was better than his senior tape. They didn't have an offensive line his senior year, and he kind of got wrecked a couple of times. And
Jake Bentley, I mean, he was kind of a transplant, but he was really good.
Dylan Thompson,
Dylan was a two-star guy.
Where was Mason Rudolph ranked?
Mason was a high three.
Okay.
And the reason here's why everybody missed on Mason Rudolph. Bobby Bentley told me this, and it was genius. we were sitting in Trimble talking because Mason Rudolph had a great Trimble. And we're like, wow. And he was like, yeah, you know, Northwestern's offense is a lot of horizontal passes. They don't go downfield a whole lot. They don't throw it downfield. They just kind of bubble screen you to death. And so Mason was doing that. And it's hard on film to get a good judge of, is he an accurate pass? Can he go down the field? And then Shrine Bowl, they were going down the field, and he was really good. What the reason why I didn't, and I think this was my last year of doing rankings. I think it's class of 14. I didn't go 4 stars on him because North Carolina needed a quarterback that year. That's where his parents went, and they passed. Clemson obviously passed, but I think that's when they got Trevor Lawrence. South Carolina passed and needed a quarterback. I think they went with Tanner McAvoy or somebody. Or maybe that was the year they went with Michael Scarnecchia at the end, which won them a game once upon a time. You know, and then Georgia passed. So and Georgia needed a quarterback that year too. So everybody passed on this kid that was kind of local. So, but what Bentley said made sense as far as the offense goes. And lo and behold, he's been set records at Oklahoma State and went to the league, got in a fight with Myles Garrett. I mean, you know, he's had a good career, but yeah, he wasn't ranked very high. I'm trying to think of in-state quarterbacks that were.
T.D. Noel mentioned Luke Doty. I mean, he was highly ranked.
Doty was highly ranked. So was Everett Golson.
Jacob Park at Georgia. Justin Worley from South Point or Rock Hill. Where was he?
Northwestern.
Northwestern, Worley. Yeah.
Because I remember, all right, so Justin Worley broke the Gamecocks' heart. And it was kind of I was in Rock Hill watching it was when Clowney was a recruit. South Point was playing Northwestern opening weekend, and Hoover played Burns too that day. So it's a great doubleheader in Rock Hill. And Clowney's bearing down on Justin Worley in the first quarter. And I think Cordero Patterson was on that team. And Worley lets it go right when he's in his face and throws a touchdown. Years later, in Knoxville, Tennessee, the exact same thing happened. Tennessee won the game. Worley threw it right before Clowney got it, cost the Gamecocks maybe a shot at a national championship. I always say that's the second most costly loss South Carolina ever took because that was Champions of Life's first year at Tennessee. They were not very good. And Carolina lost. And if they had not lost that because of the sequence of events that took place on championship weekend with an undefeated Ohio State going down and all that, you know, Carolina probably could have competed with that Auburn team that beat Missouri. Just because Ellis Johnson was the D coordinator at Auburn and Spurrier really good at dialing him up against his defenses. And in Carolina, all that happened. They hadn't lost Tennessee. They'd have won and gone to Atlanta, won the SEC. They would have been in the Rose Bowl against Florida State for the national championship. Could you imagine that? Gamecocks, Rose Bowl 2013, Spurrier's nemesis, the Seminoles. In the granddaddy of them all, man.
Talk about storylines.
Oh, that would have been tremendous. That was a costly game, and it was Justin Worley that just got the pass off, barely, and Marquez North caught it one-handed over Ahmad Christian, and they kicked the winning field goal and won the game, and that day was a complete disaster for yours truly. It just was awful.
But that same night, I think – Florida State or Louisville demolished Clemson.
It was Florida State. Florida State won the national title. It was Jameis Winston and those guys. They went into Memorial Stadium and waxed them 51-14. Clemson only lost twice that year. Once was to Carolina by 2 touchdowns at the end, and once was that Florida State loss. But yeah, I remember Everett Golson. He led Notre Dame to a national championship. So. It's funny, the last 3 times Notre Dame's played for the national title, their quarterbacks had Carolina's ties. Tony Rice obviously was from Woodruff, and they won it in 88. They play for it in 2012. Everett Golson's from Myrtle Beach. And then Riley Leonard last year was – he transferred in from Duke. you know, he's from Alabama, but transferred in from Duke. So that's a very interesting thing there. All right, now we'll talk basketball. So, back to somebody asked if anybody was going to be at the big Jay Fruit says, anybody going to be at the basketball game tomorrow? Jimmy left at halftime Wednesday. It was embarrassing. Kind of state of the program, guys, the state of the program, because obviously when you guys talk about this on late night, there'll be another game played. You're going to hash that out and kind of, you know, it kind of resets everything. But what do you think about how things are going there? And we'll start with Alex and then go to Matt.
Yeah, it's not good right now. I mean, that Florida game, you're going into that game thinking, you know, all right, this could end up being a really, you know, tough test for South Carolina just because of what Florida has on the post with those seven-footers with Condon, Hall, Hanglockton, and then Chinyelu, who, I mean, all those guys are really good. And Florida attacked the paint early, and so you knew, like, all right, South Carolina's going to have to be able to hit some early threes in this game to be able to stay in it. And that, I mean, that they just didn't make shots at all. I mean, 26% from the field compared to Florida shooting 62%. And I mean, you know, Florida got that thing up. I think, what was it, a 47 somewhere, some 47 point win. Like, they had it in that 50 range too. And, you know, we can dive into as much as you want in that game. But I mean, then Florida just had the fast break. Yeah, I know Matt's shaking his head, but. And then Florida, I mean, the thing was, too, like, if you aren't going to get offensive rebounds in that game, you can't let Florida get out into the transition. And Florida had, I think, 32 transition fast break points in that game. So it was a disaster in that game just without any – you know, it was going to be a tough test all around, but then to have it be a 47-point loss at home when, you know, it was a good student crowd. I mean, the students really, you know, showed up in their sections. It was a good crowd there. And then, I mean, just at halftime, you started to see that started to go down. But, I mean, it's this LSU game is huge for Lamont Paris just because it was a game that you won on the road. You shot really well. And I just, you know, it's a big game for South Carolina. It's one that, you know, we can talk about what's going to happen down the road and all that. But just for any type of anything, they need this game tomorrow.
Yeah, when you look at the state of – it's kind of the state of the union for South Carolina right now. I mean, they got handed – golly, a 30 burger from Arkansas. They got handed almost 30 burger from Texas A&M. They got handed a 40 burger against Florida. Someone has to rally these guys because in all three of those games, and you're talking about one, two, three, four, five, so I guess six, three of the last five games, the Gamecocks just straight up quit. Alex has the quote of all quotes when he texted me during the Arkansas game and said, Arkansas is throwing alley-oops off the background against the backboard against these guys right now. I mean, you know, you saw the fight. You saw a little bit of fight the first 8-10 minutes of that game against Florida. I thought the defensive game plan was pretty solid. They weren't hitting any threes. They weren't even really attempting threes, to be honest, that were good-looking threes. So I thought maybe this is a game that Lamont wants to ugly it up. And you can ugly it up in the SEC and find some success, but you're going to have to hit shots. And that's the Gamecocks nemesis right now is hitting shots and clutch shooting. I posted on the Big Spur yesterday. You know, this team, just from a foundation standpoint, not only do they lack a point guard, and I think Orlando Cock in the thread was talking about that. Yeah, they lack a point guard, but they lack anybody that can beat a man one-on-one, get to the paint, and make a decision, whether it's a layup, whether it's a jump shot, whether it's a kick out, whether you start getting the ball going around the horn and you get those good-looking three-point shots. There are probably only 20, 30 dead-eye pull-up off-the-dribble three-point shooters in college basketball. And right now the Gamecocks have seven or eight guys that think that they can do it. And I don't understand that for the life of me. Because you're just settling for shots. They're not getting good shots at all. And look, the SEC might not be as good as it was last year, especially at the top end, you know, the number of teams that were as good as they were last year. But the SEC is still, it's a big boy conference. And they have athletes, and South Carolina doesn't. I mean, a damning stat for South Carolina is on 20 of their 100, they get blocked 20 times per 100 shot attempts. I don't think anyone understands how obscene that is. Like, I've never seen that statistic in my entire life about any relevant program, Power Four program in college basketball. So,
yeah,
the State of the Union is rally the troops, find an offensive identity, figure the F out. Pardon my French there. But figure out what the heck you're doing, because right now it makes no sense. And until it starts making sense, and we can talk about this LSU game. LSU is not good. They are not a good basketball team. If you look at their schedule and their wins, their offense is inflated by playing nobody and scoring a lot of points against them. Now, the other thing that's scary for me, Alex, they didn't have Dedan Daniels. I think that's his name. Dedan Thomas last game. And look, if the Gamecocks hadn't started out on fire in that game and gotten up to a 20-25 point lead, they would have lost. And now LSU's back at full strength. I don't have faith in this Gamecock team the rest of the way to scratch out a win. So it's hard.
I mean, you're talking about from a block standpoint. Florida the other night had 8 blocks, and South Carolina made 15 shots total in that game. And then Florida, I think the points in the paint, it was 54-20 points in the paint in that game. I mean, you knew the post was going to be an issue, but, I mean, that's just – it wasn't even close there.
Have y'all seen 7-footers regularly multiple pump fake when you're that close? I mean, I've never seen that. And I realize that Lamont Paris is kind of in an impossible position right now, but it, had that happened, if I were coach, you'd never see him again. He would be down there at the bench in his warmups and be like, I'll do it with somebody who gives enough of a damn to go down there and rebound the basketball and fight as opposed to play around.
I think they had to try it in that game just to get some size down there in the post. But obviously, as you were talking about, it did not work out at all there.
And it wasn't that you had to leave it out there to figure it out that it wasn't going to work, you know, in a short amount of time. It's just, and here's the thing. It hasn't worked all season.
Yeah,
These guys are not like there are certain want-to stats when it comes to basketball. And rebounding is probably at the top of that list. And if you're 7 feet tall and aren't the leading rebounder on your team and aren't a big enough post presence, I don't care how good you shoot the three, get off the damn court. Bye. See ya. Yeah. Especially when you can hardly run down the court. You just kind of trot because you're out of shape. But we won't even get into that.
At one point, Florida had 90 points scored with only 9 made three-pointers. That is another statistic that I don't think I've ever seen in my life. A team score 90 points without hitting double-digit threes. It's – look, and I don't care about the pump fakes. You pump fake to death. I don't care. But don't try and attempt a layup when you can only jump 3 inches off the floor. And, look, all of the Gamecocks' worst athletes are their most pump fakers. And they're all down in the paint trying to do something. And you know it's going to happen immediately. You pump fake and you kick the ball out. You draw 2 defenders. You kick the ball out. Lamont Paris crushed it 2 years ago because of ball movement and situational shooting. That's what he crushed it. They're not doing it. And I know that Lamont is frustrated. He is not – I promise you they are not being coached to do this. They weren't being coached last year to do this. But that's the State of the Union problem. Why are they still doing the dumb things that you've coached out of them? But now it seems like they're being coached to do it. Because I promise you, nobody on this staff is coaching that. Nobody.
No. Yeah, I mean, and that's not what you – you know that's not happening at practice or whatever. But it's just like, man, come on.
And in basketball, in Paris's system, you know, basketball, you don't have to be like a football coach. You can do it that way. A lot of coaches do where you call plays down the court. All right, this is 1, this is 3, run this, run that. Some coaches – have what's called it's termed a motion offense. Now, I had a basketball coach explain this to me one time where it's based on concepts and rules. So in other words, they do this, you do that. So maybe kind of like an RPO in football, but it's up to the players to go out there and move without the ball. And these guys don't. And they did at the beginning when they played lesser teams at the beginning of the year. I thought they did move.
When they played NC State, they did, JC.
I don't understand why. What's wrong? Why are you just standing around? I mean, why does that happen? That's the
Michi. Like, and I like Michi, but Michi is not a point guard. And he can make great passes to get guys open. But when Mike Sharp, Johnson, Michi are not attacking – and they're just dribbling the ball around,
you can't do it. I don't know how to say it better. I wasn't worried about Michi not being a true point guard coming into the season, because all you got to do is get the ball across half court and start running your sets, run your offense. That's just not happening. And like, I don't care if Michi shoots 5 34 footers a game. He's going to make one or two of them, maybe four of them. Like, that's fine, but that can't be the offense. And that's the offense right now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand it. I mean, and Coach Paris acknowledged it. I was listening to the, because I turned the television off at halftime and listened to the radio call. So I listened to Coach Paris's comments with Derek Scott after the game, and you could tell his frustration. Like, he's just, you know, kind of at his wit's end, it sounds like, in that he's just like, these guys, you know, gave up. Like, and it's something you don't want to see, but you could just tell that their effort after things didn't go well early in the second half, that effort just started to fall off with some guys. And you could tell, like, you could see it even some of the first half. It's like, you're making lazy passes. I mean, it's not crisp. It's not where it needs to be. You're creating a situation where the defense can take advantage of you when they already have the advantage, right? You don't have to give them more. But if your play is lacking and your head is not in it and you're not playing high IQ basketball, then you're going to lose by almost 50 points at home. And it'll happen again.
It's not the first time, and Lamont mentioned that, it's not the first time that's happened this season. I mean, he mentioned the Arkansas game. Like, that's got to stop, just because, I mean, that type of stuff can't happen. Like, you got to continue to fight in those games, and some of those games, it just seems like they hadn't been there, like, when things are getting away.
No.
Yeah, where's the fight? Where's the I care? And you see it in the first 10 minutes of most games. And I honestly think if the Gamecocks can get through if they can get to the under 8 timeout still in the game, you know, outside of the Arkansas game, like, that was just crazy what happened in the second half. But if they can get to the under 8 in the first half, like, they've shown they can play with Georgia. They've shown they can put away LSU despite LSU trying to come back. It's one of those things where if they don't have their confidence going to the locker room, I don't know if they need what they need in the locker room to get them going again. But I mean, I think Florida's first play of the second half was an alley-oop. Like, that can't happen. Like, you have to foul it. Like, you cannot just be like, nice pass. Oh, what a hell of a dunk. Yeah, well, good job, dude. Let me slap you on the butt on your way back down court. No, that should piss you off. That should make you angry.
If you're moving so slow and not playing with enough attention to where it looks like you're admiring how the other team is playing, it might be time to switch things up.
They've got to find a way. And I mean, there's a whole bunch of things they've got to fix that obviously, you know, you can't fix now. But I mean, they just let momentum get to them so easily. And these teams get on these rolls and these runs that they just can't stop it. I mean, you see it in the Texas A&M game with that first half run. You see it in this game. Like, things just get away from them so easily, and they can't, they're not able to battle to either stop it or to battle back in that.
I mean, even that Texas A&M game, just to go back to it for a little bit, I mean, they haven't played since, but I mean, A&M was 17 of 39 from three. Like, you're letting them shoot 39 times when they've made 17 of them? Like, what is the adjustment that's happening? Obviously, it's their night. I mean, yeah, they only hit 5 in the second half, but they hit 12 in the first half. Yeah. Like, and you know what that tells me? That tells me you don't have athletes that can rotate. You don't have a defense that can move and replace. That's all basketball is on defense. It's beat your man to the spot, move and replace, make life challenging. You're gonna give up 70 points in a game most of the time. Just understand that. Make your 70 points hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, South Carolina right now, and I know it's skewed because of the three of the last 5 games, but right now, if you just look at KenPom and adjusted offense and adjusted defense, they're last in the SEC in both categories. They're barely scoring over a point per 100 possession. They're giving up 121 points per 100 possessions. Y'all, that is a 17-point difference than the non-con on defense. And it's a 12-point differential on offense. So, like, you are playing your worst part of the season in the hardest part of your season, And on top of that, like, that just tells me you don't have the team. So, like, the State of the Union is, this can't be what you trot out next year. No matter who the coach is, we, you know, it's probably time to start questioning, is Lamont going to be the head coach next year? I don't know. I like Lamont a lot, but this is 2 years in a row in the SEC in the best conference where it's just not working.
Yeah. And look, I don't. You know, people, NIL money will come up, and I think it's, I just don't know that. I mean, there are other schools around the country. I mean, look, there are mid majors that have better rosters than this.
Yeah,
that have more guys that can do more things. I mean, good mid majors, but I mean, I don't. Maybe it was a situation where these guys have psyched themselves out or something about as far as being good shooters and things like that. So I don't know. It's one of those very, very,
well, JC, weird at this point, you can't stop shooting the three, 'cause that's your only hope.
Yeah. Right.
I know you have to keep doing it, 'cause you're not going to win otherwise.
Yeah. 'Cause if the threes aren't falling, what are you turning to? Yeah. I mean, and it sounds simple to say that when the shots aren't falling, it's not going to go South Carolina's way, but especially with the way they play. Like, if those threes aren't falling, there's nothing for them to turn to offensively.
Yeah. You're right. I mean, they're not very good defensively. They're not good rebounding. They're not, like Matt said, they don't have a lot of people that can create offense, and then they don't play, you know, like I said, they don't play defense. So it's,
you don't need Kingston Flemings at Houston to be your dribble drive breakdown artist, but you got to have somebody. Like, you got to have at least one. I mean, you need three, and they got none. They got none, y'all. And, like, Michi is all of 6 foot, so, like, 6 foot on stilts, and that's your guy? Mike Sharpjump should be attacking every time he gets the ball at the top of the key. He's the tallest. He has a decent enough handle. I think that's what they want to do. It's just – and sometimes Sharpjump looks like he could be in – I'm not going to say all SEC, because that's a high ask, but, you know, a top 30% player in the SEC. Sometimes he does. Sometimes Michi does, but that's it. And Eli is still a freshman, and I swear sometimes I think Eli just wants to cut up his highlight reel right when he gets in the locker room, which is a good thing. It promotes South Carolina, but I think
Eli hustles, though. I mean,
yeah, I love Eli. I love him to death. But yeah, he seems to be the only person that gives a damn half the time.
He was about the only offense they had there in that second half for that little stretch. Like, he was the only one making shots.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the only thing you could have considered a run was when Eli was
three. Feel like a 7-6 run, Phil.
I know.
Still got 6 points every possession. They got a point every possession.
You could tell the whole place was ready to blow up on that last three that he missed, right? After he hit the first three shots.
Yeah.
And it was just like, oh. And then the air just went out of it, and you're like, okay, well, can somebody else do something?
Oh, my God. Are the people blaming Kerry Rich on the Big Spur right now? Y'all,
are they really?
Rich is not the problem at all.
Yeah, there is a desire to want to do the right thing and a desire to execute that is glaringly apparently not there right now. Like, because we have seen a Coach Paris team function as a unit, right? Five as one, working around the offense, defense, everything clicking. But I think from where I sit in the style that Coach Paris has, you have to want to do that. Like, there has to be 100% buy-in. And for whatever reason, this season, it is not there again.
Well, I've got the answer. I haven't told this to Alex or Phil. I know I told JB and JC this. You know, with the way the NCAA is ruling on things right now, if I'm South Carolina, I'm going to go to Italy, Spain, or France.
This is funny.
I'm going to find the... a tier two professional team with the professional coach that's all been together for 6 to 8 years. Alex and Whittle are going to have to learn French, Spanish, or Italian in the offseason to conduct press conferences. I'm bringing that coach over. I'm bringing his entire team of 23, 24-year-olds that are all 6'3" to 7'2". And I'm just going to say, all right, guys, split the $15 million however you want to do it. We're going to raise the money. We're going to run rampant over these college kids. And that's all we're going to do.
Go look at what Brad Underwood's doing at Illinois. That's exactly what he did. Like, they turned again those older players, and it's worked.
Well, I'm changing the game of Alex. I'm bringing an entire team over. I'm paying them all $1 to $2 million a year. They can stay here, go to the NBA. That's fine. We'll get the other kid that's coming up in your Italian system. We'll bring him over. We'll pay him $2 million, and the Gamecocks will win national championships. It's that easy. It really is. And the other team won't be able to understand you either. So, like, when you're calling out your offensive sets, how are you going to scout it?
it's like that movie, Gus, about the football kicking mule, the Disney movie that said, Oyage. Oyage. And a mule kicked that football. Yeah, it's probably Alex is way
better. Like, get outside the box, Jeremiah. Like, start thinking about this. I swear you can do it. You can raise, if you tell everybody, we're having a professional team in Columbia. And you know what? All those handlers, all those agents, all those coaches that didn't want to push their kids to South Carolina, too bad. They're not going to be able to play for South Carolina because we're Italian, baby. We're driving in Formula One.
All right. Not just one Mongolian, but a team full of Mongolians.
Yeah. Imagine if you had 12 or 13 of them, Phil.
By the way, the game time tip-off has been changed tomorrow to 1 p.m.
Yeah,
because of anticipated weather. So
it will, and Bruin, they're not illegals. So they're going to get visas. They're going to get college visas to come be a part of this great university.
Yeah, and so it's SEC Network Plus too. Dave Weinstein, Stephen Clark will be on the call. So it's the non-conference group of broadcasters. So we will see how all that goes. But yeah, you know, talking about Ben has some replacements here. I don't feel bad about talking about it because if you look at it, guys, it's, you know, they're 2-6 in the league right now. So if they lose Saturday, which they very well could, because, yes, they got up 25 on LSU in the first half because they were on fire. But they got outscored by 15 in the second half. LSU
21-41 so far, Lamont Paris SEC record.
Yeah, that's not good, especially considering Frank Martin in non-pandemic year. And if you take the pandemic year out of it, where programs like Kentucky, Duke, and North Carolina all had bad years, that basketball season was a mess. Baylor won the whole thing, so that shows you some things.
Well, they've talked about like psychological damage that having that season might have had on some of these kids. Like the Duke kids talked about, we were just in like our dorm. That was it.
Yeah.
And they could not wait for it to be over.
Yeah.
Bruin's got it right. If you suck, you're deported. Easy enough. There we go.
But Frank, okay, so you had the motivation you need. You had the screw job year where he went 11 SEC games.
Yeah.
You had the next year, Final Four year, he won 12. He did only win 7 the following year. Then he won 11 again because they went to 18 games. Shortly thereafter. So, no, they were always at 18. So he went 11-7 with a 500 team that year. That was weird. That was a weird season. Like, lost to bad teams in the non-conference, and all of a sudden were the number, I think they got the double bye in the SEC tournament, but they were 16-16. Then he went 10-8, and that's when everything got canceled in the pandemic year. Then the year he got fired, he went 9-9. So 5 of 6 seasons, Frank Martin did not have a losing record in this league. Every other coach that's coached here, from Dave Odom to Darren Horn to Eddie Fogler, I know Eddie Fogler won it 1 year and then followed it up with a nice year. Those were his only two, I believe, winning records in the SEC during his tenure. Odom was banished to the NIT because he couldn't figure out how to win. Horn didn't win much at all. Frank actually was above water. And now you mentioned a 21-41 record for Lamont and Matt. So that's 21-41. They went 13-5.
Yeah.
1 year. It was the most wins they've had since 97 when they won the thing. So what's that record without that season? 8 and 36. And like I said, I'm with you. I like Lamont. I think in a different situation he could win. I think he knows basketball. Dude, it's just been you can't lose this much and then still keeps continue. I mean, it gets to a point where, you know, no, like Ben said, if this season continues to go south and he's retained, there's not gonna be anybody there.
Well, this will tease Sunday night. Alex doesn't know about it yet, but I haven't a lot of numbers for this. But 7.5% of Lamont Parrish losses as a Gamecock head coach are 30 plus burgers. 4 times lost by 30 plus, 5 times lost by 40 plus. And if you want to take 20 point losses into the equation, 15% of his losses for the Gamecocks have been 20 plus points. That's not competitive, y'all. Like that's where the Gamecock fans are mad. I think that, you know, what Frank was great about is, yeah, Frank might lose to, you know, a Stony Brook, right? But if you count the number, I don't know how many 30 burgers Frank had to deal with or 40 burgers. I guarantee you practice was not fun the next day.
No.
But like, I honestly don't care. I understand basketball. If you lose by 9 or less, or you win by 9 or less, that game could have gone either way. Those are a couple possessions that change the game.
Yeah.
But if you're taking, you know, 10 plus point losses consistently, and there's 10 of those, there's 9 of the 20 plus losses, 4 of the 30 plus losses, and 5 of the 40 plus losses, that comes into, like, you don't understand the SEC. And that's my biggest issue, because you have to compete against those teams 18 times a year, and you got to figure that out.
Yeah, that sucks. All right, Phil, let's get out of here, man. It's Friday.
Yeah, let's do
all
it.
Right. Oh, gosh. Appreciate all you guys listening to the show. Don't forget, Late Night Gamecock Show, 7 o'clock Sunday. Alex, great smorgasbord, my friend. Oh, before we let you go, Quincy's or Ryan's? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Buffet or like restaurants.
Yeah.
I'll go Ryan's.
Matt said Ryan's. Phil,
my guy.
I was a Quincy's guy.
I'm gonna have to side with Phil.
Yeah, to be completely honest, I only ever remember eating at a Ryan's.
So I used to go to Ryan's after church on Sunday, right across the street from my church. So everyone just walked from church over to Ryan's. So it just kind of extended over like kids' playtime.
It was a big church deal in Spartanburg too. There was a Ryan's and things like that. So. You know, it was something else. But, I miss it. I miss Ryan's and Quincy's. I would go there today if I could, but I can't. I miss the old Pizza Hut lunch buffet, too. Yeah, the old country buffet.
Yeah,
we always have our memories. Yeah. You down with OCB? Yeah, you know me.
Oh, I miss the old country buffet.
Mm. Yeah, that's
good. God, pregame meal at Quincy's, Jay Frew says. Y'all are moving slow, buddy.
Yeah, that.
Football. Maybe post-game.
Yeah, man. So, anyway, guys, appreciate it. Appreciate all of you listening this week. We'll be back next week inside the Gamecocks. We'll have fun, and maybe we'll talk more positively about basketball. Maybe we'll start talking about potential coaching. All right, Tri-State's got a quick one. He's holding up the show here.
All right.
Well, we got it, Tri-State.
Tri-State says, I got y'all till 2. Don't shortchange me.
Anticipate Donovan Garden having a role in the upcoming year.
I think he's I actually checked on him recently, and he's there. He's getting there. Obviously, with returning Sean Murphy and Justin O and Fred Johnson, you know, those are your guys. But
he could be that fourth guy.
Can he be the fourth guy? Yeah, it could be him. AJ Holloway, Josh Smith. They're all in that mix right now. So I wouldn't say right now, based on what I was told, that Garden is significantly ahead of anybody, though. But he's going to be good. He's got to give him some chance.
I see him do some special team stuff again.
Yeah, definitely.
He was doing special team stuff this year. So
sweet. All right, we're out. Y'all have a great weekend.